Whiskey Sam. He was my boonie rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's better than not coming back at all. Many a good man I saw fall. And even now, every time I dream, I hear the men and the monkeys in the jungle scream. Drive on, it don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand. And I got a woman who knows her man. Drive on, it don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing. Drive on.
News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, marking the anniversary this week of the start of the Iraq War, appealed on Thursday for international unity behind the war on terrorism amid U.S. concerns over plans by a new government in Spain to withdraw troops from Iraq. U.S. officials fear international resolve in the war on terrorism could be weakened after bombings by suspected al-Qaeda followers in Madrid that killed 202 people last week and the subsequent ousting of a pro-U.S. government in Spain. Bush's call for unity seems to have hit a snag with South Korea after Seoul rejected a U.S. request for help in offensive operations. South Korea's parliament has approved government plans to send more than 3,000 troops, half of them combat-ready, to augment 600 medics and engineers who have been in Iraq since May. Their mission is restricted to reconstruction rather than offensive operations and must be under South Korean command. U.S. and Spanish officials traded barbs Wednesday, rekindling a transatlantic disagreement over the invasion of Iraq and the best way to fight terrorism. Top Republicans accused the Spaniards of appeasing terrorist groups by turning out of office the party of Prime Minister José María Aznar, a close U.S. ally. Spain's Prime Minister-elect José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, in turn, said the Iraq occupation is turning into a fiasco. Zapatero is not alone in Europe in his criticism of the U.S.-led campaign in Iraq, undertaken by the Bush administration despite international opposition and seen by many as a detour from the real fight against terrorism. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia dismissed a request Thursday that he stay out of a case involving his friend, Vice President Dick Cheney, saying a duck hunting trip they took was acceptable socializing that wouldn't cloud his judgment. The Sierra Club is pursuing a lawsuit that seeks to compel the Bush administration to release information about closed-door meetings of Cheney's Energy Task Force, which crafted the administration's energy policy. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A French artist allegedly traumatized by last week's Spain bombings was convicted of trying to run over a pedestrian he mistook for Osama bin Laden and ordered to pay the man $615. The 35-year-old defendant was sentenced Tuesday by a court in this southern France city to a 3-month suspended prison term. The man he tried to run over was unharmed. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a pleasant weekend.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you think corporate world can't get any more conniving, you've not figured on Monsanto. This is the biotech outfit that's trying to profit by putting its artificial growth hormones into our milk supply. Since consumers overwhelmingly reject this adulteration, Monsanto lobbyists got our government to let this milk be marketed with no labeling of the adulteration, so we milk buyers won't know what we're getting. The good news is that several dairies have responded by declaring on their milk cartons, "No artificial growth hormones used." The bad news is that Monsanto greedheads have unleashed packs of their attack dog lawyers to sue several of these dairies, claiming that these no artificial hormones labels are, get this, false and misleading, because they might cause you and me to think that natural milk is better for us than milk with Monsanto's additive. In the first place, I do think that. But secondly, the dairies are not making any such health claim. They're merely informing us that the corporate additive is not in their milk. What's false or misleading about that? Nothing. But by simply filing these frivolous lawsuits, Monsanto can intimidate the dairies into changing their labels. It recently succeeded with this bullying tactic against Oakhurst Dairy in Maine. Monsanto was prepared to spend $250,000 or more just on lawyers to squeeze Oakhurst. How's a small dairy going to match that? After fighting for several months, Oakhurst has settled out of court, agreeing to alter its label. Even though Maine public opinion was solidly behind Oakhurst, and even though legal analysts say Monsanto's legal case was silly putty, this is Jim Hightower saying, Oakhurst is the third small dairy that this biotech Goliath's money has beaten down, and others are targeted. For the purity of our milk, marketplace, and judicial system, we consumers need to stand against the bully. Call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Happy Friday, friends. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. End of the week here. A beautiful day in the People's Republic of Vermont. It was snowing. Whoop, there goes one now. A little snowflake. It was really coming down for a while there. I guess all over the East Coast it was happening. A little better here, I guess, than in Iraq, where Colin Powell got up to give a news conference this morning. And 30 Iraqi journalists stood up. One of them read a statement. See, apparently what had happened was that yesterday or the day before, Thursday evening, a reporter and a cameraman from Al Arabiya, one of the Dubai-based TV network, Arab TV network, they were driving down the street behind a car that ran through a checkpoint. They didn't run the checkpoint, but according to them, and according to this Reuters news report filed by Luke Baker, Dateline Baghdad, but the American soldiers opened fire. These guys, I mean, these kids are nervous. They're scared. You never know. I mean, the next car might be the one with the bomb in it. And they killed a reporter, and they wounded the cameraman, who died in the hospital a few hours later. So the Iraqi journalists stood up, and one of them said,
And I quote, "We declare our condemnation of the incident which led to the killing of the two journalists who were killed at the hands of the American forces," end quote. And then more than 30 Iraqi journalists stood up and walked out. And, you know, Colin Powell was left to say, well, at least they can do that now, and they couldn't have done that under Saddam Hussein. And that's a pretty good response, actually. And things may well be better for Iraqis. The question that Americans have to ask is, when you look back at World War II, and you see that from the time that we and the Soviets together took Berlin and ended the war in Germany, and the second bomb was dropped on Japan and they capitulated and signed a peace treaty, from those two moments, VE Day and VJ Day, until today, it's been what, you know, 60-some-odd years, in all that time, the total number of American soldiers who have been killed in Japan and Germany by American occupying forces, and we are still occupying those two countries, by the way. Well, we still have bases there anyway. The number of American soldiers who have been killed by snipers or terrorists in those two countries from the day of the end of World War II until now is zero. You will recall when Donald Rumsfeld went on TV and said, well, you know, there were these tiger soldiers who were shooting at our GIs in Germany after World War II. And then a week later it came out that it was just a lie. He just made it up. And that was, you know, a little story on page 6 of the New York Times, and it was about a half a day in the news cycle, although his claim that we had been the victims of snipers for some time played really well for a week. Well, anyhow. Yes, things may be better there. Things would be better in China if we were to depose the dictators of China. Things would be better in Burma if we were to depose the dictators of Burma. Things might be better, arguably, in Saudi Arabia, where they have rape rooms and torture chambers, if we were to depose the Saudi royal family. I mean, there's dictatorships all over the world. But at what price do we go around the world and say, we're taking your country, we're going to sell off all your private companies to big American corporations, we're taking your natural resources, and we're going to put our guys, you know, our friends, even if they haven't lived in your country for 30 years, like Ahmed Chalabi, we're going to put them in charge of your nation. It's not quite what we did in Germany and Japan. I mean, the analogy is not just imperfect, it's just completely different. So, at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, yesterday, George Bush said, now I remember when he first made this claim, and I remember scratching my head and going, huh? That had to have been a mistake. I mean, this was back, must have been last year. It was after we attacked Iraq, but it was a news conference that he held with one of the foreign leaders roughly 6 months ago. I don't have the exact date. And he made this claim that the reason that we had to attack Iraq when we did was because Saddam Hussein refused to let weapons inspectors into Iraq. Remember this? And he made this claim. Well, in fact, here's the clip. Let me just play it for you. Now, keep in mind, the reality is that the UN had inspectors, Hans Blix and Al Baradei, looking for chemical weapons and missiles and nuclear weapons, had them in Iraq for several months, and that the inspectors were before the United Nations saying, we want to go back in there. And Iraq was before the United Nations saying, please bring them back in. Iraq, in fact, had never evicted inspectors. Bill Clinton pulled them out in 1997 so that he could bomb the sites that Scott Ritter told him he thought they were hiding from him. Now, they were playing games with our inspectors, but they never evicted them. We pulled them out. And the UN pulled them out again, and Iraq was saying, please bring them back. We will prove to you. We will show to you. They provided 14,000 pages of documents showing how they had disarmed themselves. The Defense Department took over 9,000 of those pages and blacked them out before they gave them to our allies. You remember this? And this is why now the President of Poland and the new Prime Minister of Spain are saying, we were lied to by the Bush administration. But here's George Bush, and just listen to this. This is quite remarkable. This is from 6 months ago, more or less.
Subsequent to the peace speech, the CIA had some doubts.
I got to say, he's defending his State of the Union speech, where he said that there was uranium in Africa. This was just after the op-ed piece by Joe Wilson had run in the New York Times. So that must have been about 240 days ago.
But when I gave when they talked about the speech, when they looked at the speech, it was clear. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it in the speech. I'm not interested in talking about intelligence unless it's cleared by the CIA.
This is the blame it on the CIA strategy. But then he keeps on going.
And as Director Tenet said, it was cleared by the CIA. The larger point is...
Actually, Tenet didn't say that. But anyhow, the larger point is...
This, and the fundamental question is, did Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely.
Well, and it turns out the answer is no. And that's what Hans Blix was saying. That's what al-Baradei was saying. That's what the Iraqis were saying. And that's what, if we had just waited another month or two and continued with the inspections, the whole world would have known unambiguously.
And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in.
Now, wait a minute. Say what, George? Just listen to this again. The President of the United States engaging in, now, as I said, at the time when I heard it, I thought, you know, this is a bald-faced lie, but it's got to be a misstatement. It's got, you know, he's famous for just kind of saying things, and then, you know, it's a, you know, I've got to help families put food on themselves, on their children, or whatever. You know, I mean, I thought, this has just got to be a misstatement.
And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power, along with other nations, so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States.
Now, you know, as I said, I was willing to give George Bush the benefit of the doubt. But now it seems to me that this administration actually is engaged in a propaganda disinformation campaign. And I say this with great sorrow, but yesterday, before our soldiers at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, George Bush said, and I quote, 1 year ago tomorrow, the armed forces of the United States entered Iraq to end the regime of Saddam Hussein. After his years of defiance, we gave the dictator one final chance. He refused. And so in 1 year's time, Saddam Hussein has gone from a palace to a bunker to a spider hole to jail. And now we have a minister of Italy. This from the AFP, Agence France Press, the French press. An Italian minister broke ranks with his pro-war government on Iraq, telling a newspaper that last year's invasion could have been a mistake and was in any case not the best thing to have done. European Affairs Minister Rocco Buttiglione, in an interview published Thursday by the daily newspaper Il Messaggero, said, quote, "The war may have been a mistake. Perhaps there were ways it could have been avoided. What is certain is that it wasn't the best thing to do." He went on to say, "Terrorism cannot be defeated only by the force of arms, and if we give the impression that weapons play the dominant role, we will only stir up nationalist feelings among the Arabs against us." Are they rolling over in the face of terrorism, or are they simply recognizing the reality that the way that you defeat right-wing religious extremists who will engage in criminal behavior to draw attention to themselves is to brand them as criminals and bring down the forces of the police agencies of the world on them, arrest them, get them out of the way, take care of them, you know, as we did Tim McVeigh and his Loony Bunch. Actually, his Loony Bunch may still be around, but as we did with Tim McVeigh. The Associated Press, you know, along the same lines, reports that Polish President Aleksander Kwasniewski, a strong White House ally, now says he was misled about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction before the war. He's been backpedaling this morning. He's now saying, well, we're going to keep him in there. Somebody got to him. He says, but Poland, he says, I feel uncomfortable about Iraq due to the fact that we were misled with the information on weapons of mass destruction. The remarks come just a few days after the House Government Reform Committee released a comprehensive database of 237 specific misleading statements before the war made by this administration to our government and other governments about weapons of mass destruction and Iraq. The world is waking up. Is America? Is it going to happen? 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday, 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
After the towers fell, our streets, homes, and offices were coated with dust containing asbestos and other cancer-causing chemicals. But instead of heeding the health warnings of their own experts, the Bush White House told us it was safe to go back into Lower Manhattan when it wasn't. There is a better way to protect us, Mr. President. Take action now that keeps more harm from happening. Clean up the world trade dust that's still in our homes and workplaces. And be honest with us. Don't hold back health warnings that will keep us safe.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please, remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters.
We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Show a little passion, baby.
Welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 24 minutes and change past the hour. And Rod in Madera, California is on the line. 1-866-889-8894, the number to call if you'd like to be on. Hey, Rod, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, a question that I've got is when the Bush administration talks about the UN resolutions that Saddam Hussein supposedly was in violation of, I don't know for sure, I don't know the exact wording, but weren't those resolutions ordering him to disarm his weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah, Resolution 1440 specifically called for that, and it also said that only the weapons inspectors themselves, the of the UN, that's El-Baradei and Blix, had the authority to declare Iraq in non-compliance. And they never did that. And they never did that.
Right.
Article
how
9.
Could he have been in violation of those resolutions if he had, or if he has, no weapons of mass destruction?
Well, clearly he was not in violation of the resolutions.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's George Bush's big argument for, you know, one of them for now, why he went in, is because he was in violation of the UN resolutions. And in actuality, he wasn't in violation if he doesn't have anything.
Yeah. The other side of that argument, of course, is that we thought he was in violation and that he was doing his best to cause us and the rest of the world to think he was in violation because, for whatever reason, because he didn't want us to attack him, because he didn't want his neighbors to attack him. Now the flip side of that argument, the argument against that argument, is that that may have been true from, say, 97 when we bombed him and we stopped the inspections up until 2002. But in the 2003, but in the 3 months leading up to the invasion of Iraq, Saddam Hussein was aggressively trying to demonstrate to the United Nations that he really didn't have anything. I mean, he had kicked open the doors. Hans Blix said unambiguously, and we all saw it. It was on international television before the UN. He said, "We have had no obstacles to our inspections, none whatsoever." He said, "We show up. It's clear that they weren't expecting us, that they have not been wiretapping us. We have not been duped. We are quite certain that there's nothing there. Give us another month, and we think we can absolutely prove that there's nothing there." But and he kept going back to Rumsfeld and saying, "Hey, if you've got secret information like you say, give me the coordinates and we'll find it."
Yeah, and I don't remember the dates or anything, but I also remember the Bush administration coming out and stating that Saddam Hussein's denial of having them wasn't good enough for the United States, that he had to actually produce them and dispose of them.
Yeah,
how do you do that if you don't have something?
Well, and you go back to the testimony of Scott Ritter, who in 1997 was in charge of the weapons inspections, and Scott Ritter himself in his report to Clinton, which is a matter of public record. I mean, I'm not talking about his subsequent interviews, but his actual report to the United Nations, because he was working for the UN not the United States, even though he was still a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, or the Marine Corps, rather. Scott Ritter's report indicated that they had been able to account for somewhere between 97% and 99% of all the known weapons of mass destruction and or sites and or production facilities. The remaining 3%, they thought there's a very high probability that it wasn't hidden stuff, that it was just bookkeeping anomalies. That who can keep track of all this stuff, and there were these three buildings that he was suspicious about, that he thought that they were playing games around, and so that's when Clinton pulled him out and bombed those buildings.
Right, and you listen to people like Sean Hannity talk about why aren't we criticizing Bill Clinton for bombing those locations.
He did.
Yet we criticize George Bush for sending 250,000 troops to war. I think there's a lot of difference between us waking up in the morning and finding out that Bill Clinton bombed some building in Iraq and George Bush sending 250,000 troops over to overthrow a foreign country.
Yeah, it's a massive disinformation campaign on the right. John, thanks, or Rod, rather, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Exposing the con in conservative. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Last night, Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell signed one of the toughest state anti-sweatshop laws in the country. The measure requires all state agencies to impose tough requirements on the contractors that make state uniforms, including the dictate that those contractors reveal just where uniforms are being made, so the state has the option of investigating labor practices on its own. Pennsylvania is the fifth state to approve a comprehensive anti-sweatshop policy for those involved in government business.
Salaries and benefits for 6,300 Northwest Airlines pilots may take a nosedive if members of the Airline Pilots Association agree to a proposed $200 million annual cut through 2006. The pilots are considering the cut in an effort to recoup some of the $2.2 billion Northwest has lost in the past 3 years. Northwest Airlines says even this 20% cut in salaries and benefits isn't enough. They're asking the pilots union, as well as AMFA, the machinist union, to give back a full $1 billion in concessions. The president of AMFA, Local 5, remains defiant. He says the word concession isn't in their dictionary.
Although the U.S. Department of Labor has yet to approve new rules that will exempt another 8 million workers from the right of overtime pay, some companies are already cutting back on OT. Most notably, the auto industry, where General Motors and several auto parts suppliers have already begun trimming overtime to salaried mid-level managers. According to an internal GM memo obtained by the Detroit News, the company set a target to slash its overtime-related expenses by 15% this year alone.
The U.S. Labor Education in the Americas Project, Human Rights Watch, the AFL-CIO, and the International Labor Rights Fund are calling for the Bush administration to halt negotiations on new trade agreements with Colombia and Ecuador, because these countries turn a blind eye to labor law violations. Colombia has the highest rate of trade unionists murdered in the world, 172 organizers in 2002, according to Colombia's Trade Union Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors: a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew he'd side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.
Welcome back. Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy. Tom Hartman here with you. 26 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. You see, where John McCain today, yesterday I guess it was, in today's news, said John Kerry is not weak on defense and would not compromise national security if elected. In fact, on the early show on CBS yesterday, he said, you know, it's the most bitter and partisan campaign that I've ever observed. Now, keep in mind, John McCain, that he's ever observed. Keep in mind that this is the guy who, when he was, you know, he beat George Bush in the primaries in New Hampshire, as I recall, and he were down in South Carolina, and it looked like McCain was going to be the Republican nominee, and George Bush, Karl Rove goes in there, and they start doing push polling. They called thousands of, tens of thousands of people in South Carolina and said, if you knew that John McCain had fathered a child with a black woman, how would that affect your decision to vote for him or for George Bush? And people said, well, it wouldn't matter or it would be a big deal. I mean, whatever they said. But it was, and they weren't charging him with this. They were just asking a rhetorical question, right? And it wiped him out. And McCain, you know, made it through that. And he says, it's been 2 weeks into the campaign that George Bush is like an official candidate and attacking Kerry by name. And John McCain, who lived through that, says this is the most bitter and partisan campaign that I've ever observed. What is coming beyond that is just absolutely incredible. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Vin in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Vin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks. Been meaning to call since the quote-unquote transition, but this has been my first opportunity.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, well, we're glad you're still out there. You essentially hit on the topic that I was interested in, which is this announcement by McCain that John Kerry was his friend and indeed not soft on defense. And I'm wondering when the Kerry campaign is, you know, going to turn around and start retaliating. And I think this is kind of a perfect fulcrum for them to turn on.
Yeah, I am hoping that they will. Kerry, however, is really stuck in an awkward position right now because the majority of Americans know nothing about him. And Bush is working very hard and very quickly to define him in negative terms for the majority of Americans. And if he reacts to those definitions, that is, if he fights back, then a lot of people are going to think of him as the guy who fights back in a negative way rather than a positive. I mean, it has to be done so delicately.
Yeah, that's why I was interested in this, because I thought this gave him an opportunity for positive kickback.
Yeah.
In the sense that, look, here's John McCain. He's my friend, and, you know, he's vouching for my record.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm a Kucinich supporter, and I also gave to the Dean campaign, but I had to turn around late last night and pull out my credit card and give John Kerry some money, because
yeah.
I think it's time. I really think it's time that we funded the campaign and got some positive John Kerry stuff out there.
Democracy itself is at risk.
As you point
right
out, this democracy may not survive another 4 years of these idiots.
Yeah, it is really getting that serious. It really is. It's really that scary. Vin, thanks for the call, and thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to hear from you, and good to know you're still listening there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. 1-866-889-8894. Jane, also in New Mexico, has a question. Hey, Jane, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I had a question. Two things, a comment and a question. We never heard the word terrorism until this administration got into the act and started publishing it. And I heard...
I'd heard it a lot. I mean, you know, the what's been going on in Israel for a long, long time has been called terrorism. There was the Shining Path down in Peru. I was actually in Lima, Peru, in a hotel three blocks from the presidential palace when it got bombed by terrorists down there in the early 1980s. Terrorism is nothing new.
Well, I don't think it's anything new, but we never had it advertised as much as we have it now.
We've never declared a war on it.
Yeah. The question I had, with the Poland, is the minister, I guess he's a minister. At one point he indicated that he was misled, and then he decided that he was going to stay. I wonder, what are they coerced to come to, threatened if they leave? I wondered if the president threatens them with something or coerces them with something.
Yeah, this was the Polish president. In Italy, it was a minister. It was one of the. It was their foreign minister. It's a good question. A lot of people are asking that same thing, Jane, right now. They're wondering, you know, was the situation that. Somebody called him up and said, "Hey, you want that foreign aid money? You dance to our tune, or not?" I mean, you know, who knows what it's going to be. Let me remind you, by the way, that Bernie Sanders is going to be with us at 1 o'clock this afternoon Eastern Time in another 20 minutes, and we're going to have brunch with Bernie. And I know he loves to hear from people when they call. Our quote for the day from Sir Winston Churchill, and this is such an appropriate quote, and this is something he said after World War II. During his unsuccessful campaign for prime minister, he said, "Never, never, never believe any war will be smooth and easy, or that anyone who embarks on the strange voyage can measure the tides and hurricanes he will encounter." The statesman, Winston Churchill said, "The statesman who yields to war fever must realize that once the signal is given, he is no longer the master of policy, but the slave of unforeseeable and uncontrollable events." An extraordinary quote. Our quote for the day is that the end of hot meals for U.S. troops in Iraq. Halliburton has a multi-billion dollar contract to feed and house U.S. troops, but there are problems. A food subcontractor. See, we give Halliburton the money, and then they hire somebody else and give them the money, and then they keep a bunch of it, and they don't really do anything. They got all these subcontractors that runs 10% of the dining facilities in Iraq, claims it hasn't been paid by Halliburton for months and is threatening to stop serving hot meals to the GIs. Halliburton owes it $87 million, including payment for President Bush's Thanksgiving dinner and the plastic turkey used in the photo opportunity. Well, that's an interesting turn of events. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, it's so wonderful to have some rational balance to the number of right-wing lunatics we're inundated with up here on the radio. We've got Savage and Limbaugh and Reagan. I won't name them all, but it's just continuous.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dave. And I have to, you know, I want to be on record as saying that I think that it's appropriate that these guys have their say too, and that I view what I'm doing as balanced too. In fact, I'm a little concerned that if there's any truth to what Howard Stern is saying, that, you know, the government came after him only when he began to criticize George Bush. That's a very chilling thing. You know, suddenly liberal talk radio is starting to take off now in America, and all of a sudden the FCC is starting to talk about raising fines for indecency and censoring content and things like this. And I think it should concern people on the right and the left. But that's a whole other topic, and it's probably not what you called about.
Oh, no, I wanted to share a couple of thoughts with you, but I do think that is a wonderful thing, and I hope you're able to stay with it. And yes, I think the government does inflict reprisals and retaliations against those that speak out. Bush does believe, I think, that he serves at the pleasure of God, that he has been chosen to be the president. He also believes he has a mandate to shift as much money as possible from the very poor to the very rich.
Well, I mean, mostly from the middle class, frankly, to the very rich.
I think they really believe that those people who are living out of trash cans, who have almost nothing going for them, that are living under bridges and such, are there by choice, that they, you know, if they have no hope for medical insurance, that's somehow God's will, and still take more money from them and put it into the pockets of Halliburton is what he's all about. That's the American way. That's what true Americans are all about.
And, you know, Dave, that myth is very pervasive. I mean, you know, Limbaugh has been promoting that myth, and the conservatives have been promoting that myth since Reagan. But when you look at the history of the United States, just the United States, I mean, you can see this in any other country as well, but most American citizens have enough understanding of American history to know that there have been times when we had huge numbers, when conservative economic policies reigned during the late 20s and early 30s, and we ended up with a Great Depression, and we had had millions of people, as you say, living on the streets and out of garbage cans. And then FDR came along and we had, I'll call them liberal economic policies, for lack of a better word. You could call them Keynesian or whatever you want to call it. But anyhow, we had I call it rational democratic economic policies. We had liberal democratic policies through the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And during that time, we had this golden age of the middle class, and people weren't living out of garbage cans. And then Reagan comes in and starts imposing, you know, trickle down or trickle on economics, and suddenly we've got people living out of garbage cans, and all of a sudden, if you just think about it in that context, their logic that people who are poor, I mean dirt poor, desperately poor, are that way by choice, completely falls apart. It completely falls apart because there wasn't just a sudden decision by all these people at these times. The government plays a role in creating the marketplace.
One thing, Tom, I hope also you will never let us forget is that we need a paper trail backup to prove how people have voted, because they do have any number of high-tech hacker goons who know how to rig voting machines, and that is the plan. I think Bush pretty much told us so again in that last interview on Meet the Press, when they told him the polls are going against you, you might lose. Oh, that's not going to happen. You know?
Yeah. Well, my hope there is that some good journalist on the right, you know, a Robert Novak or the Mooney, what's his name, Tony Snow, one of these guys who writes in the right wing publications, will just project out into the future a little bit. What would happen if Bush lost? What would happen if the Democrats took power and the voting machines were riggable? And, oh my God, the Democrats might rig the voting machines. And all of a sudden, you know, then there'll be this Republican bandwagon to make them impartial.
Maybe George Will would take it on.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I think that there's, yeah, George Will, I believe, actually has a shred of conscience and philosophical grounding. I mean, I disagree with his philosophy, but at least he's philosophically consistent and has been over the years. Hopefully these people are going to start to speak up.
Thank you so much, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Dave. Good to hear from you. 15 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program discussing solutions and not false promises. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Kathleen in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for all your service to us, the people left here.
I'm pleased to do it.
Of us.
I'm having fun.
Yeah. I wanted to repeat what Vin, who called a few calls ago from Santa Fe, that we're in dire straits out here in Santa Fe, one of the more progressive cities in the country, by losing all the progressive programming, with the exception of you.
Yeah, well, Kathleen, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop you right there, and the reason why is because I am not willing, and for that matter, able. It wouldn't be right for me to get into discussions about how any of the radio stations that we're on are making their programming decisions. That's something that you have to take up with your local folks. So this, I'm sorry. I appreciate your concern, but I tell you, I am back to back with Sean Hannity from coast to coast, literally. And, I don't know what your situation is there, but it's life. That's life. And in those communities where, and I've seen this happen, in those communities where there are local companies or unions or sponsors who are looking to reach a, quote, liberal upscale audience, whatever that is, you know, those latte-drinking, Volvo-driving, what? In those communities where there are advertisers who want to reach those people, they walk into the radio station and say, hey, I'll buy some advertising on the radio if you'll put somebody on the air who is talking to my people. And they call us up, and boom, we're on the air. This week we've had four radio stations call and make inquiries about carrying the program. So, that's how to get active. By the way, it's to support the local advertisers of the program. If you want to support this kind of programming, call up the advertisers that you hear, the local advertisers. Their money goes to the local radio stations. It doesn't come to me. And call up the local advertisers and say, I'm so glad that you're advertising on this program, on this station, in this community, and I'm going to patronize you, and I'm going to tell my friends to patronize you. And that's right across the board, that's how it works. It's just That's the marketplace, and that's the not the free market that the conservatives talk about when they say that which is really a euphemism for let's get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency. But that is the free market. That is the marketplace, and it's an appropriate thing. Military families and anti-war activists are urging Congress to censure President Bush. Did you notice this one? The censure Bush movement. MoveOn.org has, it's MoveOn.org has an ad here. Let me just play a quickie here from it.
If George Bush had told the truth a year ago, here's what he might have said.
My fellow Americans, we have no evidence that Iraq has stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. No connection to 9/11. No nuclear capability. They pose no imminent threat to America.
If he said that, would we have gone to war, spending $125 billion and losing more than 500 American lives? When a president misleads us, he must face the consequences. Congress should censure President Bush now.
Yeah, so they're calling to censure him, not to impeach him, but, you know, let's just put this on the public record. 1-866-889-8894. Mike in Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Mike?
Well, the thing is we get into this election process and everything. If you get into the water cooler wars,
uh-huh.
One of the things that you might want to do is the definition of liberal in the dictionary is one that's broad-minded, tolerant
uh-huh.
of other ideas.
Yes,
and we
need to bring it back.
Well, yeah, and that and willing to go with a progressive way of looking at things.
Yeah, exactly. Well said, Mike. Mike, I'm sorry we got to end it there, but well said. We need to reclaim our language. Tom Hartman, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Years from now, the winter forecast in parts of the world might have more rain and less snow. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global warming is likely to change patterns of rain and snow around the world. For parts of North America, that might mean winters that are wetter than today. Dick Weatherald is a climate expert with the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He studies the way patterns of rain and snow might change as the atmosphere warms up, and he uses the most up-to-date computer models in his work. Weatherald compared the results of his research with those from other computer systems.
And what we're seeing consistently is an increase in precipitation in middle latitudes during most of the winter season and early spring seasons.
Weatherald says those changes will affect the northern part of the United States and the southern part of Canada. He says the increase in winter precipitation is likely to come as more rain, not more snow. That could reduce the amount of water that percolates down into groundwater aquifers.
Rainfall tends to run off very quickly. It doesn't have a chance to run into the ground. Where snowfall tends to melt off usually fairly slowly, and that slower melting allows the water to percolate into the ground and recharge the groundwater supply. It makes a big difference. Snowfall is good. Snowfall is very beneficial to the water table because it allows the water to go into the ground rather than simply running off.
Groundwater is essential for providing water to rivers and lakes and to wetlands that are fed by springs. It's also an important source of water for drinking and irrigation. Weatherald has written a paper on this research that will be published in the Journal of Climate this spring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylor Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Mike in Florida, we were talking just before the break, and you had not yet finished your definitions. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, well, Tom, I guess I know we ran against the break there, but briefly, if you're talking to a true conservative, you have to respect the way they look at things, too. And they're supposed to, by dictionary definition, preserve existing institutions. And if they stand by and let the American middle class get decimated by NAFTA and GATT, they're not doing their job.
But see, what the conservatives at the Heritage Foundation or American Enterprise Institute would say is that the American middle class is an artifact. It's the result of welfare policies of the government. For example, the tax deduction on the interest that you pay when you buy a house, a home mortgage, yeah. One of the things. The minimum wage laws, the unionization laws that allow unions to exist in the United States. That these things are not traditional institutions. That these are socialist institutions in their mind that were imposed by Franklin Roosevelt and that were imposed in smaller part by Abraham Lincoln and were imposed in smaller part by Thomas Jefferson, and that they have been their job has been to dismantle them in the 1840s, in the 1850s, in the 1880s and 1890s, in the 1920s, and now again since Ronald Reagan. And so they're just going back to a time when the only purpose of the government was to defend our borders and maybe provide police and fire services, although even that is something that a lot of conservatives, the hardcore conservative libertarians say local communities should decide whether or not they want to pay for. And if your house burns down, you should negotiate with the fire department before how much will you pay them to do it?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think there's a lot of things in this country that have developed since then that have become institutions. Like the American middle class, and it's just that they meet us halfway just to deal with the lies and the deceit, like in this war that we're dealing with right now. We wouldn't have that much to fight about, really.
Yeah, but you have to get it that the cons have no interest in meeting anybody middle, you know, halfway. I mean, these guys are it's a war. I mean, they called it a class warfare. They've been calling it that for 15 years. That's what it is. They declared it, and they've been winning it recently, and it's time for us to take it back. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report.
Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, marking the anniversary this week of the start of the Iraq War, appealed on Thursday for international unity behind the war on terrorism amid U.S. concerns over plans by a new government in Spain to withdraw troops from Iraq. U.S. officials fear international resolve in the war on terrorism could be weakened after bombings by suspected al-Qaeda followers in Madrid that killed 202 people last week and the subsequent ousting of a pro-U.S. government in Spain. Bush's call for unity seems to have hit a snag with South Korea after Seoul rejected a U.S. request for help in offensive operations. South Korea's parliament has approved government plans to send more than 3,000 troops, half of them combat-ready, to augment 600 medics and engineers who have been in Iraq since May. Their mission is restricted to reconstruction rather than offensive operations and must be under South Korean command. U.S. and Spanish officials traded barbs Wednesday, rekindling a transatlantic disagreement over the invasion of Iraq and the best way to fight terrorism. Top Republicans accused the Spaniards of appeasing terrorist groups by turning out of office the party of Prime Minister José María Aznar, a close U.S. ally. Spain's Prime Minister-elect José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, in turn, said the Iraq occupation is turning into a fiasco. Zapatero is not alone in Europe in his criticism of the U.S.-led campaign in Iraq, undertaken by the Bush administration despite international opposition and seen by many as a detour from the real fight against terrorism. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia dismissed a request Thursday that he stay out of a case involving his friend, Vice President Dick Cheney, saying a duck hunting trip they took was acceptable socializing that wouldn't cloud his judgment. The Sierra Club is pursuing a lawsuit that seeks to compel the Bush administration to release information about closed-door meetings of Cheney's Energy Task Force, which crafted the administration's energy policy. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A French artist allegedly traumatized by last week's Spain bombings was convicted of trying to run over a pedestrian he mistook for Osama bin Laden and ordered to pay the man $615. The 35-year-old defendant was sentenced Tuesday by a court in this southern France city to a 3-month suspended prison term. The man he tried to run over was unharmed. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a pleasant weekend.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Do big-time CEOs, no matter how compassionate and cuddly they might be personally, have to be SOBs on the job? Yes, says the conventional wisdom of greater corporate world. The bottom line dictates that wages and benefits be slashed and that offshoring be pursued with a vengeance. It's not personal, just business. Look ye to Walmart, boom the market gods, directing CEOs to follow the anti-labor, low-wage, no-benefit, move-it-all-to-China ethic of this giant. The gods decree that no one can outcompete Walmart, so best to imitate the beast. Apparently, Jim Senegal has been going to the wrong church. He's CEO of Costco, the profitable warehouse club retailer that's fast-growing across the country. He takes a shockingly heretical view of his job, boasting of his company's fair treatment of employees. We pay much better than Walmart, Senegal says. That's not altruism. It's good business. Indeed, Costco's pay is much, much, much better. A full-time Costco clerk or warehouse worker earns more than $41,000 a year, plus getting terrific health care coverage. Walmart workers barely get a third of that pay, plus a lousy health care plan. Costco even has unions. Yet Costco's labor costs are only about half of Walmart's. How's that possible? One reason is that Costco workers feel valued, which adds enormously to their productivity, and they don't leave. Employee turnover is a tiny fraction of Walmart's rapidly revolving door. Another thing Senegal rejects is offshoring. Quote, we could move some operations to Bangladesh or somewhere, but what kind of message would that send to our employees? Not a good one, I think. This is Jim Hightower saying, while Walmart makes twice as much profit as Costco, Senegal believes it's better business to make a nice profit, but not a killing, and to invest more in Costco's 92,000 workers.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, SmallDog.com, and the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com. You can find them both on the Internet. It is Friday afternoon, the second hour of our three-hour program, and Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. He became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years back in 1991. He has since been reelected five times and is the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. America's congressman, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom. How have you been?
I am great, Bernie. Hey, I saw that you are up to something here. You and Rahm Emanuel of Illinois and Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Ross DeLorio of Connecticut have written a letter to the HHS Inspector General. You want to tell us about that?
Well, absolutely. What we have, and we've discussed this on the program before, is the very pathetic prescription drug bill under Medicare that Bush pushed through. And I think many of the listeners will remember that it took the Republican leadership 3 hours, when we're supposed to have a 17-minute vote, took them 3 hours to pass this bill at 5:30 in the morning.
Now,
Bernie,
in the 227-year history of the Congress, has that ever happened before?
No, to the best of my knowledge, that is the longest roll call that Congress has ever had. And the reason for that, Tom, is that you had a number of members who, for a variety of reasons, I thought the bill was pathetic because the benefits that seniors will get will be minimal. Some of the conservatives said, hey, we don't want to spend what we thought was going to be $395 billion over a 10-year period. They thought that that was too much money. To make a very long story short, and what this letter that you refer to is about, it turns out that, in fact, the Bush administration was told by the actuary people at Medicare that the bill would cost somewhere around $550 billion, which Bush acknowledged 2 months after that bill was signed. And the fellow, the actuary at Medicare, whose job it is to tell Congress how much these type of programs will cost, he was threatened by the fellow who was head of Medicare, a guy named Tom Scully, who said to him, if you tell Congress what you know, we're going to fire you.
Now, hang on just a second. This guy's job was not to report to the president. It was to report to you?
Certainly. His job as an actuary is to give the president and members of Congress information when they request it. How can we make good public policy if we don't have good information? And he was threatened with the loss of his job, and that is what the investigation that Tommy Thompson is now undertaking is about, what we have demanded.
Yeah. Now I've noticed that some of the conservative talk show hosts and whatnot are trying to spin this around and saying, you know, well, it's a terrible thing that Medicare bill is going to cost $150 billion more than we thought it was, but it's just proof positive that it really is wonderful benefits, very generous benefits for all of America's elderly people. See, it's even more than we said it was. You all should be happy.
Well, I have to confess that our friends have a very good imagination.
Yeah.
In point of fact, this is a disastrous bill for a couple of reasons. If you are the average senior, you're going to have to end up spending paying for your prescription drugs to the tune of 70 or 80% of the actual cost. So the benefits that you're going to receive are minimal. Second of all, what almost everybody recognizes, the pharmaceutical industry wrote the bill, and the proof of that is that there is language, if you can believe this, right in the legislation, which specifies that the United States government and Medicare cannot negotiate with the pharmaceutical industry to lower the cost of prescription drugs. And thirdly, Consumers Union estimates that 1 year after the implementation of this bill, and by the way, it's such a good bill that the president wanted implemented in 2006, not before the election, 1 year after in 2007, the average senior will be paying more out of his or her own pocket for prescription drugs with that program than they are today without the program.
That's how bad it is,
because there's no control about the escalating cost of the prescription drug costs.
Then why is the government spending more money if we're getting fewer benefits?
Because the essential problem with the cost of prescription drugs is that we pay by far the highest prices in the world to an industry that enjoys record-breaking profits, and where the cost of prescription drugs is going up 15 or 20% every year. So if you do not control the cost and prices are going up 15 or 20% a year, what are the prices going to be in 3 years?
Right.
So if I give you a benefit, which is not particularly good now, but I don't control the cost, the amount that you're going to have to pay out of your own pocket is going to rise substantially over the next 3 years.
So they're tossing us a bone. They're saying, you know, here, we're going to pick up a little tiny piece of the bill, but we're going to rig the game so that the bill that you're paying, that we're picking up a little tiny piece of, is going to go up dramatically.
Exactly.
And the little tiny piece that we're paying, of course, is also going to go up dramatically, and that's why some have referred to this Medicare bill as a welfare bill for the pharmaceutical companies.
So the pharmaceutical industry is laughing all the way to the bank. One of the ironies, not ironies, is this fellow Tom Scully, who was head of Medicare, who threatened the job of the actuary at Medicare. Well, he has since left government. Now, I know you will be shocked to learn.
I can feel it coming.
He has gone to work for a law firm that lobbies for the pharmaceutical industry.
I'm shocked, Bernie.
I know, Tom.
I'm shocked.
Not only that, I've got to tell you something else that will equally shock you. The fellow who was head of the Commerce Committee in the House, a fellow named Billy Towson of Louisiana, again, I know you'll be shocked to hear this, who helped write the bill, probably was the lead person in the House in writing the bill. Well, shock of all shocks, he was given an offer by Pharma, the trade group representing the pharmaceutical industry, for $2 million a year to work for them. Now, I know the listeners will be very shocked by this.
That
gives you an indication.
This is unbelievable. Yeah, this has got to be one of the most corrupt administrations in history. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, and let's see, we've got a couple of calls here. Paul in Huntington Woods, Michigan is on the line. He's been patiently waiting. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program. You're on live with Tom and Bernie.
Hello, Representative Sanders. And Tom, you know, in supporting your work, it is really amazing how many Saturday Peace Vigil events can be found at unitedforpeace.org.
Okay.
Just a couple blocks from here on Woodward, in front of the St. John's Church, we'll have a vigil at 5:30 tomorrow afternoon. And unitedforpeace.org also provides names and contact information for groups that are sponsoring these events tomorrow.
Okay, we got that, Paul, and it was a nice commercial. Is there a question in there, or did you want to just make that point?
Well, we're supporting your work, Bernie.
Okay, let me just say a little. Paul, thanks for calling. As everybody knows, this is the anniversary of the war in Iraq. The president and the Republican leadership are now, you used the word spin a moment ago on this prescription drug bill, and it's the same thing with Iraq. The spin that is now going on is to say that, gee, Saddam Hussein was a terrible guy, and in fact he was an awful guy. He was a murderer and a crook and everything else you want to say about him. And therefore the war was justified because Saddam Hussein is now in jail. And that's that. So therefore the war was a good thing. But I think many of the listeners understand that in fact... this war has been in many ways counterproductive in terms of fighting terrorism. We were told that we were supposed to go to war because Iraq, presumably, had weapons of mass destruction and were an imminent threat to our welfare, and that turned out not to be true. We were told that Iraq was allies with Al-Qaeda, and that turned out not to be true. One of the distressing aspects about this debate is that there are people today, who still believe that Iraq attacked us on 9/11, which is, of course, not the truth.
Yeah, well, about half of America's population, actually, from some studies, still believes that.
And while the Bush administration publicly acknowledges that that's not true by innuendo, when they can keep comparing Saddam Hussein with Osama bin Laden, two terrible guys, but two very, very different guys, that misunderstanding keeps permeating the American public. Fighting terrorism is going to be a long-term struggle against some very, very fanatical people, who are evil people, in fact, in my view. But I think a very strong argument could be made that the war in Iraq is not helping us in that fight, but in fact taking away a lot of resources and energy and focus that we should be using fighting Al-Qaeda, and instead that is bogging us down in Iraq.
Yeah, all of a sudden we're looking for Osama. Why weren't we a year ago? Because we were in Iraq.
That's right. And, you know, we are spending at least $150 billion in Iraq. Interestingly enough, and this is really fairly sad. It is sad. As you know, Tom, we have now lost some 570 young men and women in Iraq, and there are about 2,700 who have been wounded, some of them quite seriously, many of them quite seriously. There was a resolution that the Republicans pushed through the other day, which didn't even acknowledge, didn't even mention the fatalities or the wounded, because they want to give this war a kind of spin which it certainly does not deserve. What is also of concern, and I think all of the listeners know, that in Spain, people now throughout the government that was supporting Bush in the war, recently the fellow who's head of Poland acknowledged that he was misled on the war. When you look at the polls of Muslim countries, the kind of support that a murderer like Osama bin Laden is receiving is frightening.
Yeah.
So when we look at the struggle of fighting terrorism long term, which is what it must be, we need the international community behind us. We need the Muslim countries behind us. And I'm afraid that in many ways, we are moving in exactly the wrong direction.
Yeah, Bush blew it. 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. Harry in Ann Arbor listening to us on WSDS. Hey, Harry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on Live with Bernie.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman.
Hi, Harry.
It's an honor to speak to you. I'm in Michigan, and I've always been one of your admirers.
Thank you very much.
I'm one of the infrequent callers. I'm one of these dirty liberals. And I supported Bush on going to war, but I figured that we're going to war because Iraq would be a pincer.
Harry, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought. I'm going to put you on hold. We've got a break we've got to take here 20 minutes after the hour. And
yeah, okay.
Just hold that thought, and we'll pick it up on the other side of this break. If you can just hang on for 4 minutes. Okay, great. Thanks, Harry. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digital Link system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, 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 yeah. What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home.
And welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone, the Tom Hartman radio program, live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, border to border, coast to coast, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org on the internet, our internet radio station, listener supported radio station. Okay, we were talking with Harry in Ann Arbor. And,
yeah.
Harry, finish your thought there if you'd like.
Yeah.
Thanks for your patience.
Well, getting back to why I was for going to war, I was for fighting terrorism. And in order to fight terrorism, we needed a base in the Near East because it couldn't count on the Saudis or anybody else. But I was prepared for a 20-year war to bring democracy back to... not back to the Near East, but I was wrong, because according to experts, it'll take at least 30 years before we can bring democracy back. And I was for us fighting with the United Nations, because you can't fight terrorism alone.
No, that's exactly
because
right.
We need every country in the world to fight them, because the terrorists can be in Ann Arbor, they can be in your town, they can beat. They are able to be anywhere. So in order to fight them, we need the world with us, not the world against us.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
I think Harry makes
a
very good point. And clearly, one of the areas that many, many Americans are concerned about is the degree of anti-American feeling being felt all over the world, throughout the Middle East, in Latin America, in Europe, in Asia, and the feeling is that the United States will do anything it wants whenever it wants. And I think that's wrong for a number of reasons, but as Harry indicates, in order to be successful in the fight against terrorism, we are going to need the strong support of every country on earth. I was just looking at the results of a Pew a research center, international study. This is what they say. In Pakistan today, in Pakistan, almost two-thirds of the people there view Osama bin Laden favorably.
Yeah.
And more than half view him favorably in Jordan and Morocco. And that is a real concern. So we have got to reach out to the rest of the world, work with the rest of the world in the long-term struggle against terrorism. And I think the unilateral action in Iraq in that sense has been counterproductive.
And this doctrine of preemptive war.
Right.
I mean, this is a brand new thing. I mean, for us. I mean, you know, Germany did it back in the 30s, and it was the norm, I guess, in the 16th and 17th century. But
that's right.
It's a brand new thing for the United States. Terrible. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy in Rio Rancho. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Favorite time of the week. Hello, Bernie.
Hey, Roy. How are you?
A couple, three good compliments and then a question, and I'll get off and listen. Number one, I absolutely admired your grilling of Greenspan. Righteous indignation is wonderful.
I played this earlier in the week, Bernie. It's from 6 months ago. I played it on the radio show.
It was wonderful. I was thinking it was this last time.
Well, I'll tell you something. Greenspan sometimes gets treated like a god, and the truth is he's simply a reactionary economist who represents corporate America and big money interests.
I would like you to pass on, if you have any contacts with the Kerry campaign, that with this whole disinformation thing about name the foreign leaders, I'd like to see John Kerry get up and just say, I will name a foreign leader when the president names who outed Valerie Plame. And secondly, or thirdly, or wherever it is.
You got just about 5 seconds, Ray.
The interrogation of McClellan the other night,
mm-hmm.
I wish it had nailed him more. I am so disgusted that he got a promotion when he would refuse to answer questions at a committee hearing.
Yeah, good point, Roy. We'll let Bernie respond to that when we come back from this. I'm sorry, we got to take a break here. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Last night, Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell signed one of the toughest state anti-sweatshop laws in the country. The measure requires all state agencies to impose tough requirements on the contractors that make state uniforms, including the dictate that those contractors reveal just where uniforms are being made so the state has the option of investigating labor practices on its own. Pennsylvania is the fifth state to approve a comprehensive anti-sweatshop policy for those involved in government business.
Salaries and benefits for 6,300 Northwest Airlines pilots may take a nosedive if members of the Airline Pilots Association agree to a proposed $200 million annual cut through 2006. The pilots are considering the cut in an effort to recoup some of the $2.2 billion Northwest has lost in the past 3 years. Northwest Airlines says even this 20% cut in salaries and benefits isn't enough. They're asking the pilots union, as well as AMFA, the machinist union, to give back a full $1 billion in concessions. The president of AMFA, Local 5, remains defiant. He says the word concession isn't in their dictionary.
Although the U.S. Department of Labor has yet to approve new rules that will exempt another 8 million workers from the right of overtime pay, some companies are already cutting back on OT. Most notably, the auto industry, where General Motors and several auto parts suppliers have already begun trimming overtime to salaried mid-level managers. According to an internal GM memo obtained by the Detroit News, the company set a target to slash its overtime-related expenses by 15% this year alone.
The U.S. Labor Education and the Americas Project, Human Rights Watch, the AFL-CIO, and the International Labor Rights Fund are calling for the Bush administration to halt negotiations on new trade agreements with Colombia and Ecuador, because these countries turn a blind eye to labor law violations. Colombia has the highest rate of trade unionists murdered in the world, 172 organizers in 2002, according to Colombia's Trade Union Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors: a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Strange to me, the movies had that mummy thing, but nonsense has a welcome ring, and heroes don't come easy. Now nonsense isn't new to me. I know my head.
Welcome back. It's Talk Radio for the Rest of Us, the Tom Hartman Program with you. And by the way, Roy in Rio Rancho, I pushed the wrong button there. I thought I was potting you down, and I dumped your call. So I know that you wanted to make an additional point. But Bernie, the things that Roy did say, did you want to comment on them?
Well, I think one of the things is in terms of Greenspan, as I mentioned a moment ago, he gets kind of a holier-than-thou treatment here in Washington, D.C., and people should understand that when you talk to him, this is a guy who says we should abolish the minimum wage. This is a guy who has very different points of view of whether or not tax breaks are good or bad ideas, depending upon who is president. Greenspan, to my mind, represents the very wealthy in corporate America, and people should not forget about that. In terms of this fellow McClellan, who is now being promoted to take Tom Scully's place as head of Medicare, he is leading the effort in this country to make sure that Americans cannot receive safe and affordable prescription drugs from Canada and other countries. He was grilled very, very hard by people not only like Byron Dorgan, a Democrat, but Senator John McCain, who did a very good job in putting this guy on the grill. Unfortunately, he has that job, which I think is unfortunate.
Yeah. An inside politics question for you, Bernie, and I know that this is something that you're not all that much into, but do you think that there's any possibility, and feel free to tell me if this is just not something you're into, of a Kerry McCain ticket?
There's some talk about it, and McCain fanned that discussion a little bit by saying that he would be willing to talk about it. I think it's highly unlikely.
Yeah. It'd be... interesting. It would be interesting.
Yes, it would.
Anyway, 25 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the air. And Matt in Farmington, New Hampshire is on the line. Hey, Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on live with Bernie.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman Sanders. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Matt.
Listen, I'd like to change the subject, if I could, and talk about conservative assault on education. It's my belief that the whole voucher thing and all that is ultimately going to lead to an uneducated majority in this country. And I wanted to get your take on that. And, of course, as you can imagine, an uneducated majority would be very easily manipulated. And that's my concern.
Well, I think, Matt, when you look at the president's and right-wing Republicans' view on education, you have to take it in a broad, look at it in a broad context about their view on government in general. These are guys who, of course, in their heart of hearts, want to privatize Social Security and give that over to Wall Street. They want to privatize Medicare and give that over to the insurance companies. They want to privatize, in the long run, in my view, the Veterans Administration. And some of them go around even suggesting that public schools are government schools, kind of like North Korea, I suppose. These guys are not sympathetic to anything which is publicly controlled. I think in the long run, not tomorrow, but in the long run, what would happen is you would have vouchers going out to the middle class and the upper middle class who could add their own money to the voucher, send their kids to private schools. The remaining people in the public schools would be low-income folks who would get very little public support, inadequate funding. So you would have an extremely segregated by class, not by race, too, but by class educational system also. There would be a huge emphasis on religious and parochial schools. So those are the concerns that I have. In the long run, what public education in America has been about is doing our best to make sure that everybody coming together receives good quality education. It's, in a sense, a melting pot of young people who learn what democracy is about, get a chance to meet people who are different than they are. And I think if we destroy public education, we move just to private schools, we're going to have serious problems in this country.
Congressman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I feel like you represent me. I'm here in New Hampshire without any representation, and I appreciate what you do. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Matt. And Bernie, how, you know, there really is a crisis in public education in the United States, and I spent a lot of years going around doing in-service trainings for school districts and things, and I actually am the president of the board of directors of a private school in New Hampshire, the Hunter School in Romney, New Hampshire, for ADHD kids that we started 7 years ago. How do we solve this problem, and how do we respond to the cons who say, well, throwing money at the situation doesn't make it any better? What kind of repair work do we really need to be doing?
Well, we need to do a lot of work. I mean, obviously, we could spend many hours on that subject alone. But the first thing that we need to do is to understand that education is of extraordinary importance.
Yeah.
And at the federal level, we start assuming some of the responsibility, the real responsibility, of adequately funding education. For example, as you know, the federal government mandated mainstreaming for special ed kids, but forgot to put the kinds of money needed to help those communities implement that program.
Right.
So you're seeing in communities all over America very high tax rates for public education. Special ed has something to do with it. So point number one, federal government has to assume its proper role and not leave community after community fighting every secondly, we have got to make sure that teachers in America do some of the most important work are fully appreciated. What job is more important than educating our young people? And yet you have throughout this country inadequate salaries. You have instances right now in the United States of America, while Bush gives tax breaks to billionaires, where school districts are laying off teachers, and then the president goes around talking about how important education is. And thirdly, I mean, as a culture, we have got to appreciate that intellectual activity is something not to be sneered at, not to be made fun of, but to be appreciated. So there's a whole lot of stuff that has to be done, I think, to improve education, and that's certainly one of the most important tasks in front of us.
Solid and well said. And this is something, you know, Thomas Jefferson on his tombstone did not want the fact that he was president of the United States to be on there, not because he was ashamed of it, but he didn't think it was the most important thing. Founder of the University of Virginia, he wanted on his tombstone.
That's exactly right. Think for a moment. Right now, because of the decline of the middle class and the fact that many women who would prefer to stay home, or fathers who would prefer to stay home with the kids, are at work, you have huge numbers of kids who are now in child care. We are paying child care workers in America less than McDonald's pays. No training, no benefits, no career opportunities. That's what we say to working parents, how much we appreciate and are concerned about their kids. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah. And again, we can go back to, you know, the beginning of the end of the golden era of the middle class in America was the beginning of the Reagan administration, when the conservatives started dismantling programs that essentially held together the middle class.
Right.
And Reagan presided over the destruction of the last of the free public universities in the United States,
right.
University of California system. And you know, yeah, we could go on a rant. But Chris in Phoenix is on the line, and so let's pick up his call. Chris has called 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on, there's a line open. Hey, Hartman Program, you're live with Bernie.
Thank you, Mr. Hartman, and thank you, Congressman, for your time. I'll get on it. Why is our government and our Senate spending so much time on the FCC regulations and all the after effects of the Super Bowl, when in reality it was less than 1% of the public that actually outcried about it? How come they're not focusing that attention on the trade policies and,
good,
you know, or some sort,
yes,
of adjustments or repealing NAFTA? Why are we focusing on things that are important, but I kind of believe they're secondary in comparison to a lot of the other,
Chris,
things that are going
that
on.
That is a very, very perceptive question.
Yeah, and let me add to that, Bernie, and before you answer, toss in this question. Do you know Howard Stern is now saying that the only reason that they're going after, mm-hmm, him is because he started going after,
yep,
Bush? I mean, now liberal talk radio is suddenly starting to take off, and all of a sudden we're seeing the Congress talking about censorship of radio.
Well, here's the point in terms of Chris's question, which I think is an enormously important question. When Chris talks about the Senate, or when somebody else will talk about that, the House, understand, nothing comes up, certainly in the House of Representatives, that the Republican leadership does not want it to come up. I cannot walk downstairs here, and I'm in Washington now, and say, hey, I want to discuss this issue. It doesn't work that way. You can't get your bill onto the floor unless the leadership wants it. What we are seeing, and will increasingly see in the months to come to the election, is an enormous attempt to deflect the American people's attention from the most important issues, such as the collapse of the middle class, the fact that people are working longer hours for lower wages, the fact that our health care system is disintegrating and more people, A, have no health insurance, B, are underinsured, C, the cost is soaring, D, we have the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Our trade policy has resulted in the loss of millions of jobs because corporate America prefers our workers to have to compete against people in China who make 20 cents an hour, and on and on. So Chris's point is, well, why aren't we discussing those issues? And the answer is, corporate America and the big money interest obviously don't want to discuss those issues. They want to deflect our attention on everything else. So you're going to see a lot of what we call wedge issues. Watch this constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. You're going to hear a whole lot about that. Do people stay up nights worrying about that? No, they worry about their jobs. They worry about their health care. Those are the issues we won't discuss. So what politics is about, and the Republican leadership is as cynical as any group I have ever seen, deflect attention away from the real issues that impact the middle class, get onto wedge issues where you can divide the American people, and then hope that you're going to get reelected in November.
Yeah, this is what Bush Sr. did with the Burning the Flag Amendment.
Absolutely. You got Burning the Flag. You got guns. You got prayer in the schools. You got, you know, affirmative action, gay rights, all of this stuff.
Yeah, they just reach into the hat and pull it out. What do you think about this, the indecency stuff that's, you know, the,
well,
talking, you know, about raising the fines?
I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, what you are seeing on some radio shows, because these people and many corporate America stations will not talk about real issues. What they talk about is really, really, really vulgar stuff that kids are exposed to. On the other hand, obviously, we've got to protect the First Amendment and make sure that in this country people have the right to say what they want to say. But the more important issue, and you and I have talked about this, and what the FCC, in fact, should be really concentrating on, is the fact that a smaller and smaller number of large corporations are controlling media. And as you know, the FCC has recently made a decision that would make that situation even worse. That is an issue of enormous concern. And the question of how we diversify media, how we make sure that there are more and varied opinions on the air, is something that we really should be talking about.
Yeah, and time will tell. We'll see how it shakes out. It's a tough one. 1-866-889-8894. Monica in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Monica, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello, and thank you, Bernie, and thank you, Tom, for the information you give us daily, which is really important.
Thank you.
I have a question that's related to education and the spending of money on the military and on absurd things. You know, like in Santa Fe, I have three adopted kids, and the last is finishing high school. Actually, two of them are finishing high school. And for 3 weeks, they had no teacher in one class, which was really amazing. I was going to volunteer finally to go in myself, but they finally hired a teacher. And it's part of it is lack of money, and part of it is like the teacher left to go to a higher paying job 3 weeks after the semester started, or 4 weeks, or whatever it was. But it's really shocking. And then at Capitol High, they're having to, it's almost like a jail now, they're having to employ more security people because of, you know, problems at the school and everything. And it's really because the quality of education is so poor that so many kids are bored and they cause trouble. But so that's one problem. But then what's mind-boggling is that I had just heard over this week that the new Pitt facility, state-of-the-art Pitt facility, has been designated for Los Alamos, and that the Congress has agreed on the money for it.
The new what facility?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, what facility was that?
The Pitt facility. You know what Pitts are?
No.
Okay, well, you should, as a congressman, you should really know.
Well, maybe I do, but you have to...
Yeah, okay. A pit is the trigger for a nuclear bomb.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
And they already have, you know, that was the facility that was at Rocky Flats and polluted terribly, was moved to Los Alamos, and they can make 50 pits a year, but they want to go up to making 500 pits a year, which, you know, that means we could have 500 new bombs every year, which is completely absurd. There are like 800 or several thousand pits in storage that are perfectly viable for at least 60 years.
Okay.
You know, and
Mark,
so
and
we had, let me just finish this real quick. We had meetings a year ago, and even the water expert for Los Alamos Lab said we don't have the water to build these. You know, this would be disastrous for our, and then it looked like it might go someplace like the Savannah River, or it might go to Carlsbad or whatever. But now again, in spite of public outcry and everything, and Congress just recently voted for this, and I don't understand that.
Right. Okay.
That it would go to Los Alamos, that we need the pits. We don't need them. It's the most absurd thing in the world.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Monica. Might that be that they're talking about these strategic nuclear weapons and they need a new variety of them or something, Bernie?
I'm not actually familiar with that particular program.
Yeah.
But what I think Monica is talking about in a broad sense are the priorities in this country. And she's talking about the fact, not only in New Mexico, but in many states in this country. Hard to believe that when people understand, you know, when the president is going around talking about the importance of education, that all over America, in reality, you are seeing teachers being laid off, schools with totally inadequate budgets, while the president is spending more than he has to on the military. As Monica points out, we need a strong military, but there's a lot of waste in the Pentagon, a lot of duplication of services and weapon systems. In addition to that, we are not putting enough money into environmental protection. Monica makes that point as well. That has to do with the priorities of this country. Where should we be spending our money?
Yeah. Amen. Well said, Bernie. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I'd like you to wrap up what we can do, Congressman Sanders, what we as individuals can do to take back democracy in America. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Fertilizing your lawn can sometimes help the environment, according to a Wisconsin scientist. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Keeping your lawn healthy reduces runoff, and that's good for area lakes and streams. John Steer is a horticulturist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Steer says people have the common misperception that applying fertilizer to their lawns will pollute lakes and drinking water. He says in reality, most lawns go unfertilized, and that might be worse for the environment.
We actually get less runoff with properly fertilized turf, not excessive, than we do with unfertilized turf. And the reason is because this causes the plants to become more vigorous, more healthy, deeper root systems, larger root systems, more leaf area. This situation causes the turf to actually act as a better environmental filter to prevent runoff.
Steer advocates the use of integrated pest management to keep lawns healthy. That means finding methods other than chemicals to control weeds and other pests. Steer says that does take some effort.
For turf, that boils down to three things. If a person wants to have good quality turf that stops erosion, helps filter runoff, provides oxygen, and so forth, one of the best ways to do that is to properly mow it, fertilize it, and irrigate it. Those three things, very healthy turf, can almost always be maintained without using pesticides. But most often, people neglect one, two, or all three of those.
Steer says you can get advice on how to manage your lawn in ways that are safe for your family and the environment by contacting your local cooperative extension office. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, it's Tom Hartman with you and Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. I hope you're not offended by my referring to us as the People's Republic here, Bernie.
No, we take that as a compliment.
I always considered it one. In the last 3 minutes we have here, people are constantly asking me, you know, what can I do? And particularly, you know, people who don't have the good luck of having you as their elected representative.
What can people do to
change? It's really not that complicated. One of the things that bothers me is people know enormous amounts about everything, but they don't know very much about how politics works. And the truth is, it's not that complicated. There's going to be an election in November. What every person in the middle class, every working person, every low-income person should understand is that George Bush and the Republican leadership represent the wealthy and the powerful, and they could care less about ordinary Americans. So the question is, how do we organize and how do we educate to defeat them? Let me just make a couple of points. First, I would urge people, check out my website. It is a good website. It's bernie.house.gov. You can learn a lot about what's going on in Congress. Second of all, make sure that everybody you know is registered to vote. If every listener in the next 7 or 8 months registered 10 people, it could have a profound difference on this campaign. Then make sure that those people go to the polls. If you have interesting information, good information, that it kind of counteracts the Rush Limbaughs of the world and Tom DeLays of the world, share that with your friends. Engage people in political discussion. We've got to change the political culture of this country, which says it's great to talk hour after hour about basketball, but somehow we should not be talking about health care and why we're the only country in the world without a national health care system, about what's going on to the middle class in terms of our economy. Engage people in the process. Hold meetings. Talk to your member of Congress. Invite him or her to discuss the most important issues facing your community. If they don't want to come, tell them, well, thank you, you'll be looking at somebody else in November. We can do it, but yeah. People have got to understand that in a democracy, we can't be spectators. We've got to be activists.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, thank you very much for being with us today, Bernie.
Tom, and you keep up the great job that you're doing.
And I shall, and you too. Thanks, Bernie. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America.
Spiritual thirst. It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are...
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, marking the anniversary this week of the start of the Iraq War, appealed on Thursday for international unity behind the war on terrorism amid U.S. concerns over plans by a new government in Spain to withdraw troops from Iraq. U.S. officials fear international resolve in the war on terrorism could be weakened after bombings by suspected al-Qaeda followers in Madrid that killed 202 people last week and the subsequent ousting of a pro-U.S. government in Spain. Bush's call for unity seems to have hit a snag with South Korea after Seoul rejected a U.S. request for help in offensive operations. South Korea's parliament has approved government plans to send more than 3,000 troops, half of them combat ready, to augment 600 medics and engineers who have been in Iraq since May. Their mission is restricted to reconstruction rather than offensive operations and must be under South Korean command. U.S. and Spanish officials traded barbs Wednesday, rekindling a transatlantic disagreement over the invasion of Iraq and the best way to fight terrorism. Top Republicans accused the Spaniards of appeasing terrorist groups by turning out of office the party of Prime Minister José María Aznar, a close U.S. ally. Spain's Prime Minister-elect José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, in turn, said the Iraq occupation is turning into a fiasco. Zapatero is not alone in Europe in his criticism of the U.S.-led campaign in Iraq, undertaken by the Bush administration despite international opposition and seen by many as a detour from the real fight against terrorism. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia dismissed a request Thursday that he stay out of a case involving his friend, Vice President Dick Cheney, saying a duck hunting trip they took was acceptable socializing that wouldn't cloud his judgment. The Sierra Club is pursuing a lawsuit that seeks to compel the Bush administration to release information about closed-door meetings of Cheney's Energy Task Force, which crafted the administration's energy policy. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A French artist allegedly traumatized by last week's Spain bombings was convicted of trying to run over a pedestrian he mistook for Osama bin Laden and ordered to pay the man $615. The 35-year-old defendant was sentenced Tuesday by a court in this southern France city to a 3-month suspended prison term. The man he tried to run over was unharmed. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a pleasant weekend.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried, and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Broadcasting live from Vermont, where it's snowing again. It never ends. Tom Hartman here with you. What a beautiful week this has been, and what a great Friday. Did 5 hours of live radio this morning, filling in for Doug Steffen. That was a lot of fun. 425 markets across the country, and now this program. It's a long day, but an invigorating one, and I hope interesting for you. Yesterday, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia declared, the Center for American Progress reports, that despite a recent duck hunting trip with the vice president, by the way, it being Friday afternoon, I'm going to go through some news things here, some stuff that I think is significant, important, relevant, and interesting. But if there's something on your mind that you'd like to talk about, feel free to give us a call. Any topic you want. 1-866-889-8894. Back to Antonin Scalia. Despite a recent duck hunting trip with the vice president, his impartiality in an upcoming case considering the legality of the secrecy surrounding Dick Cheney's energy task force could not reasonably be questioned. It took him 21 pages to explain why. The Wall Street Journal editorial page says that this is the smackdown for the ages. Applauding Scalia for putting those nasty folks in their place. This is not the Wall Street Journal's language, but my interpretation of it. For putting those nasty folks in their place who dared question his impartiality when he went on this trip with Dick Cheney. Well, here, as the Center for American Progress points out, the core of Scalia's argument is that even though Cheney is a named party that is in this lawsuit, he is named in his official, not his personal capacity. Therefore, his social interaction and personal affection for the vice president is of no concern because, as Scalia says in his 21-page brief, nothing the court says on those subjects will have any bearing upon the reputation and the integrity of Richard Cheney. Oh, really? If we find out that the vice president, as vice president, lied to us, oh, that has nothing to do with his reputation or his integrity. Nope. No. This is... Scalia concedes that, quote, there could be political consequences from disclosure of the fact, if it be so, that the vice president favored business interests, and especially a sector of business with which he was formally connected, end quote. But in a revealing argument, Scalia, the Center for American Progress reports, Scalia does not believe that formulating the nation's energy policy with his old corporate cronies and then illegally concealing it from the public for 3 years would be a source of personal embarrassment for the vice president. Maybe he figures that Cheney just is, like, unembarrassable. You know, it's like, at what point
does somebody have so little consideration for whether the nation thinks that they tell the truth or not that they're beyond being embarrassed. Apparently, Scalia thinks rather poorly of Cheney's personal self-image. Scalia, he plays politics with the law. He argues that the political consequences to a ruling against Cheney are not relevant because, and get it. Now, remember, this is the guy in Bush v. Gore, in Bush versus Gore, where George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the recount in Florida. And the recount was stopped. This is the guy who in Bush v. Gore said that the count must be stopped because, and here's a quote from the ruling, from Scalia's opinion in the ruling in Bush v. Gore, that the vote count must be stopped because if it was to continue, it might, quote, cast a cloud upon what Bush claims to be the legitimacy of his election, end quote. That's not politics. That's not involving yourself in politics. No, Scalia says, political consequences are not my concern. He says, in fact, to ask him to consider political consequences is to ask judges to do precisely what they should not do. Apparently, he thinks what he did in 2000 was precisely what judges should not do. Talk about having your cake and eating it too, or, you know, whatever cliche. Scalia, the Center for American Progress points out, has an interest in helping the White House. His decision not to recuse himself, you know, recusal, it's a fancy word that means basically what judges do when they recuse themselves is they say, hey, I have a personal interest in this case, and therefore, I'm not going to be the one who rules on it. It's called a recusal. And one of the more common reasons in courts all across America for recusal is that they're friends with one of the parties who's involved in the lawsuit or in the criminal action. I mean, that's probably, of all the reasons for recusal, that's probably the most common one. Scalia's decision not to recuse himself in a case that so personally affects the Bush administration comes at the very same time the administration could soon be choosing someone to replace Chief Justice William Rehnquist at the top of the court, and Scalia would like to have that job as Chief Justice. Rehnquist has recently told MSNBC that he's mulling retirement, and Scalia has been mentioned as a replacement, despite his arch-conservative views. I'd say Scalia goes beyond arch-conservative. I'd say he goes to just plain old corrupt. For example, he says that when he and his son-in-law, at Cheney's invitation, flew down to Louisiana with the vice president on Air Force Two, that it's not accurate to say that he received a sizable gift from a party in a pending case. He bought a round-trip airplane ticket on a commercial flight so he could return to Washington on his own schedule. And he says, therefore, none of us saved a cent by flying on the vice president's plane. That's like my saying, I think I'll fly down to New York on United First Class and spend $750 and bill it to the taxpayers if I had the ability to do that. When I could go on JetBlue for $69, but you know, I'm not saving any money by spending the 60. You get the metaphor. I'm mangling it here, but you understand the point. The vice president's plane. Well, he acknowledges that, quote, flying on the vice president's jet was more comfortable and more convenient than flying commercially, end quote. He says the opportunity should not be considered a gift, but a social courtesy. Which brings us back to the question of judges recusing themselves because they know defendants socially. But anyway, it's a, he says it was a social courtesy. Really, it was about, he said, avoiding, this is a quote, inconvenience to our friends who would have had to meet our plane in New Orleans and schedule separate boat trips for the hunting camp for us and for the vice president's party, end quote. That doesn't involve cost. It's not a, you know, this isn't something of value. Scalia, referring to the privilege of flying on Air Force Two with the vice president, concludes, and I quote, And by the way, I agree with this sentiment. If it is reasonable to think that a Supreme Court justice can be bought so cheap, the nation is in deeper trouble than I thought, end quote. Apparently, the nation is in deeper trouble than most of us thought. This is absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program today, Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I just heard an interesting bit of news last night from the BBC. And I was wondering, do you know what the second largest security force in Iraq is now?
No, I don't.
Oil security. 14,000 people are now there guarding the oil installations.
You mean private contractors?
Iraqi volunteers. They're getting paid, I think it's $100 a month.
Well, they're not volunteers. If $100 a month is good money in Iraq.
Yeah, it's about 20 times the normal pay,
yeah,
what they were paid before. But they're the second largest security force in Iraq now after the U.S. military.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so another point that oil is more important than people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, as Dick, yeah, I played the clip the other day. I won't play it again. But Dick Cheney said, you've got to remember that Iraq sits on 10% of the world's oil. That's a very significant supply. And George Bush, in his speech to the Iraqi people, that was part of the speech to the American people, said, do not destroy oil wells.
Yeah. Also, came across an interesting website today called Iraq Revenue Watch. It's a part of the Open Society Institute, which I guess is supported by George Soros.
IraqRevenueWatch.org. .org,
yeah.
Okay.
It's got a lot of good stuff there.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
IraqRevenueWatch.org.
Yeah, part of the Open Society Institute.
Make a note here. Okay, well done, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling. Okay. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. The Secretary of State directly contradicted the Bush administration's assertion that, to quote, Iraq is the central front on the war on terror, end quote. See, this is, I mean, the war in Iraq and the, quote, war on terror, end quote, are two completely different things. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Iraq was not harboring terrorists. Iraq had no weapons that they were intending to use against us. Iraq represented no threat to us. It may have been a threat to their own people, but that's a description of at least 50 other countries in the world as well. Many of them far more vicious than Iraq. It was the attack on Iraq is not the war on terrorism. It was simply a war on Iraq. And these guys in this administration, and of course, you know, Rupert Murdoch and his buddies, they try to roll it together. It's a tremendously profitable thing. But anyhow, Powell conceded that despite the White House efforts to tie the fight against al-Qaeda terrorists to the invasion of Iraq, the recent terrorist attacks by al-Qaeda, he said, quote, have nothing to do with the war in Iraq. That's interesting. And right. One of the few guys in the administration who occasionally gets it right. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned, we'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the Small Dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought...
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
To the Real Free Speech Zone. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Interesting comments in our chat room. You can get to it at www.tomhartman.com. Benedict at large. Tom, oil security. And guess who owns that private oil security force that Jeff from Denver was just telling us about? Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler who's getting over $300,000 a month from the Pentagon. to provide intelligence about Iraq, and who wants to be the guy in charge. That's interesting. I'm passing this along. I can't vouch for the veracity of it, Benedict, send me the link. I'd like to see that. We'll check it out and we'll report on it if that's the case. Interesting. A couple of interesting other notes in there, but I'll leave you to drop in on the chat room and meet the folks. A great group of people and a fascinating conversation. Medicare, a bunch of, investigative stuff going on. Some interesting stories here coming out of Washington, D.C. This Scully guy, Thomas Scully, may not have been acting alone when he threatened a government employee into keeping his silence. This about the Medicare, overstating the it's being called in the press, the cost of Medicare. I think a more appropriate way to say it would be his stating the true level of corporate welfare, the true amount of pork that was built into this bill, the true number of billions of dollars that will be transferred from your and my tax dollars to the pharmaceutical companies of America. Because that's really what this is about. I mean, that's what it boils down to, very simply. It's not about providing benefits to you or me. It's not about providing benefits to Medicare recipients. It's about making sure that some of the largest donors and funders of the conservatives in the United States, both Democratic and Republican, but in particularly the Republicans, but there's, Democrats in their pockets, too, and with their hands out and calling themselves conservatives and whatnot, that they are taken care of. That they get their billions. Well, anyhow, it looks like this guy wasn't acting alone. The Washington Post reports, here's a quote from the Washington Report. Richard S. Foster, the government's chief analyst of Medicare costs, who was threatened with firing last year if he disclosed too much information to Congress, said last night that he believes the White House participated in the decision to withhold analysis that Medicare legislation President Bush sought would be far more expensive than lawmakers knew. End quote. This could be a bombshell. I mean, the administration previously claimed Scully, quote, had acted unilaterally and that he was chastised by his superiors when they learned of the blocked information and the threat. Yes, we didn't want him to do that. He was a bad boy, and he was punished for that misbehavior. Yes, indeed. However, in an interview last night, Foster said, and I quote, he understood Scully to be acting at times on White House instructions, probably coming from Bush's senior health policy advisor, that being Doug Badger. I just remember Tom being upset, saying he was caught in the middle. This is a quote from Foster. I just remember Tom being upset, saying he was caught in the middle. It was like he was getting dumped on. Caught in the middle. On the one side, he's got the White House saying, you got to lie to Congress. On the other side, he's got the law saying, your job is to report to Congress and tell them the truth. An uncomfortable place to be caught. Now the guy comes clean, and the entire right-wing venom machine is crashing down on him. Just watch. It's here it comes. Boom. Yes, indeed. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The glass ceiling persists throughout the world, but it's less prevalent in Russia than anywhere else. A 26-nation poll by business advisory firm Grant Thornton found that nearly 90% of Russian corporations include women in the ranks of senior management. The Philippines ranks second, followed by the U.S., while Japan, the Netherlands, and Pakistan were at the bottom of the list. But even for frontrunner Russia, women only made up 42% of senior management positions.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Last night, Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell signed one of the toughest state anti-sweatshop laws in the country. The measure requires all state agencies to impose tough requirements on the contractors that make state uniforms, including the dictate that those contractors reveal just where uniforms are being made, so the state has the option of investigating labor practices on its own. Pennsylvania is the fifth state to approve a comprehensive anti-sweatshop policy for those involved in government business.
Salaries and benefits for 6,300 Northwest Airlines pilots may take a nosedive if members of the Airline Pilots Association agree to a proposed $200 million annual cut through 2006. The pilots are considering the cut in an effort to recoup some of the $2.2 billion Northwest has lost in the past 3 years. Northwest Airlines says even this 20% cut in salaries and benefits isn't enough. They're asking the pilots union, as well as AMFA, the machinist union, to give back a full $1 billion in concessions. The president of AMFA, Local 5, remains defiant. He says the word concession isn't in their dictionary.
Although the U.S. Department of Labor has yet to approve new rules that will exempt another 8 million workers from the right of overtime pay, some companies are already cutting back on OT. Most notably, the auto industry, where General Motors and several auto parts suppliers have already begun trimming overtime to salaried mid-level managers. According to an internal GM memo obtained by the Detroit News, the company set a target to slash its overtime-related expenses by 15% this year alone.
The U.S. Labor Education in the Americas Project, Human Rights Watch, the AFL-CIO, and the International Labor Rights Fund are calling for the Bush administration to halt negotiations on new trade agreements with Colombia and Ecuador, because these countries turn a blind eye to labor law violations. Colombia has the highest rate of trade unionists murdered in the world, 172 organizers in 2002, according to Colombia's Trade Union Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors: a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So you spin to the right, then spin to the right, then spin to the right again. Then you spin clockwise, spin to the starboard, spin to the right, and then you move a little bit abrupter. You're our nation's finest interrupter. Yours is the last word and first word. All the words in between and a rude outburst word.
Shut up!
I put the bull in bully.
Oh, really?
No, O'Reilly.
Oh!
So you spin to the right, then spin to the right, then spin to the right again.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here with you. 26 minutes before the hour. Moving along into the third hour of our program here on Friday, the last day of the week. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to drop in and say hi, if there's anything on your mind. Do you think that joggers should be able to mace dogs? I mean, you know, it's anything you want to talk about, it's fine. I have some couple more interesting things here that I wanted to share with you. The ethics probe. I'm frankly surprised by this, that this thing is actually happening. You remember Representative Nick Smith of Michigan, the congressman from Michigan? That three-hour vote that Bernie Sanders was talking about, where Denny Hastert held the, and typically the vote is supposed to take 17 minutes in Congress. And if you don't show up, then, you know, you're not there, and that's tough and that sort of thing. And they held this thing open for 3 hours while Hastert, and this is caught on camera, on C-SPAN,
Hastert and Tom DeLayer running around, you know, verbally bending people's arms, you know, saying you gotta this, and you know, you gotta go along with this thing. And they went to Representative Nick Smith, the Republican of Michigan, whose son is going to replace him, he hopes. I mean, you know, it's another one of these, let's create a political dynasty in the family kind of things. He wants his son to replace him. And they said, number one, if you will vote for this bill, which Smith was actually opposed to, because he's one of these conservatives who doesn't think that the government should be doing anything to encourage a middle class or protect people in their old age. They said, if you'll support this bill, we'll give you $100,000. And if you won't support this bill, we'll make sure your son never gets elected to public office. And Smith went on TV and talked about this. And then all of a sudden, you know, there was all these calls for an investigation, and the Democrats were all upset, and this is bribery, and this is illegal, and now it looks like there's actually going to be an investigation. The House Ethics Committee is going to look into this thing. It's established a special investigative subcommittee to probe whether he was offered a bribe for his vote when conservatives were trying to ram through the Medicare prescription bill last November. And the committee will, quote, have jurisdiction. This is from Roll Call, which is a newspaper on Capitol Hill. The committee will have a jurisdiction to conduct a full and complete inquiry into alleged communications received by Smith, end quote, which offered financial support for his son's congressional campaign in return for a yes vote from Smith. Fascinating. Let's see. We will see where that goes. You know, as Bernie said, nothing happens without the Republican leadership allowing it to happen. And I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those, you know, sleight of hand gestures. But we'll see. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program today. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Did you hear President Ho-Ho the Sock Puppet's little speech today?
Ho-Ho the Sock Puppet. I love it. Pardon me. I'm sorry. That's no, I didn't. I'm sorry. I was on the air from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Oh, that's
morning.
Right. Yeah.
And then I was doing show prep for this thing.
The quote that really kind of floored me, which kind of just, I guess, bypassed everyone else was, and I believe this is a direct quote, quote, democracy has taken hold in Afghanistan. I'd like to know where. Hamid Karzai was not.
Wait a second. George Bush said that?
He said that during the middle of the speech. Democracy has taken hold in Afghanistan. Now, Hamid Karzai, the former Unocal oil consultant, was not voted into office by anybody. He was appointed by the Bush administration.
Yeah, that's to the best of my recollection, that's the case. Yeah.
If I've gotten that correct, and I heard it live, that's just a bald-faced lie.
Well, it's and yesterday he said that the reason that we had to go into Iraq was because we gave Saddam one last chance and he defied us.
Yeah. You have a good day, man.
And yeah, thanks, Chris. I appreciate the call. It's President Ho-Ho the sock puppet. Oh my goodness. I really do think that at some level. You know, I try to maintain some decorum here. I think, you know, the office of the presidency has, the conservative attacks against Bill Clinton, when you had these guys, reading, what's-his-name's report on Monica and all the graphic detail. I mean, they basically produced this X-rated document, and then you had, you know, right-wing talk show hosts reading these things out loud on the air and stuff. I don't think it's, you know, whether I like Bill Clinton or not, I just don't think that's helpful ultimately. And so, you know, I'm kind of torn. There's part of me that just, you know, wants to respect the office because it's, you know, Thomas Jefferson held that office and James Madison held that office. Some very good people have held that office. And then there's part of me that goes, yeah, President Ho-Ho the sock puppet. Yep. Anyhow, Condoleezza Rice has told the United States, she's told you and me, that we can go take a leap if we want to know what she knew about 9/11. She's told Congress that they can take a leap. She's told the 9/11 Commission that she will not testify before them. Now, her knowledge is too precious. However, she will
deliver a speech by satellite at the invitation of Mr. Rupert Murdoch's Fox News operation, which includes Fox News. This from The Guardian of London. She's going to address the News Corporation think tank involving Rupert Murdoch's most senior newspaper executives from the UK, US, and Australia. The folks which have been hugely supportive of President George Bush and achieved notoriety in the UK during the Iraq War for its ultra-patriotic reporting. I would not call it patriotic to promulgate and promote mistruths or lies to the people. I just don't call that patriotism. But anyhow, Rice's appearance, quote, underlines the importance of Rupert Murdoch's news operation to the Bush administration, which may face growing criticism that it led the country into war on false pretenses. Surprise, surprise. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the air. Gary in Missouri's on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you, sir. First time listening on the Sears Network today.
Great.
I was wanting to ask you, don't you think that there really was a connection between Hussein and Bin Laden? That was George Bush Sr.?
Between Bin Laden and Bush Sr.? Well, you know, Bin Laden's father was, you know, business partners with Bush Sr., but I doubt that there was a connection with Bin Laden Jr., you know, the terrorist, and Bush Sr.
Sr. was head of the CIA, and Russia was attacking Afghanistan. Didn't Bush sponsor Bin Laden at that time?
Yes. Yes. Actually, okay, you're right. You're absolutely right. We helped create Al-Qaeda during the Afghan war against Russia to throw out the Russians. You're right. You're absolutely right. And you know, there are some folks who are dismissed as conspiracy theorists by some who suggest that association continued over time. That's where I get skeptical. But yeah, I mean, we created the whole, we didn't create specifically Al-Qaeda, but we created that network to throw the Russians out of Afghanistan and succeeded.
Well, I know that that's a common bond between both Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden, and Saddam Hussein, is that George Bush Sr. was, in effect, the one to put them both into power.
Yeah, yeah.
As not only with the CIA and as the president, when he was helping Saddam Hussein to go against Iran at the time, I believe it was.
Yes. Yeah. So we're left with the question, you know, coincidence or conspiracy? And it's a question. See, these are the kind of things. This is why it really, you know, when the founders came up with this idea of three branches of government and the idea that there would be a balance of power. So if, you know, anybody got too big for their britches, there'd be another branch of government to take care of it. And as we saw, you know, with the Watergate investigations, or for that matter, the Congress going after Bill Clinton, it's a healthy thing. When you have at least two parties, you know, participating and in an adversarial relationship, and right now you've got all three branches of government under the control of one party, and that party has no interest in investigating these kind of things, and so odds are we'll never know.
Well, I know that party was interested in investigating everything Bill Clinton did, and yet they didn't seem interested in the fact of what the vice president did in the Enron situation. Different instances with the president and his connections with the Alaska oil companies and all.
Yeah, and this, in my mind, this goes beyond partisan stuff. This goes beyond Republicans, Democrats, or even liberals, conservatives. This gets right down to the core of democracy and what's appropriate and what's not in a democracy. How do we govern ourselves?
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, sir.
Sure enough. Thanks for calling, Gary. It's great to hear from you and great to know that you're listening on the Sirius satellite there in Missouri. Tax dollars for movies. Ladies and gentlemen, your tax dollars at work, reports the Center for American Progress, the Department of Homeland Security. Now, remember, this is after the administration just got outed for producing fake news. Remember this a couple days ago? Jon Stewart, the Daily Show, you know, the fake news show, had so much fun with this a couple nights ago. The administration produced this fake news report with this, what was her name, Karen Ryan? Karen Ryan reporting from Washington, D.C. Yeah. And it was a fake news report that
Excuse me, just got distracted there. A fake news report that said Medicare is just fine. It's more, only better. I mean, it's the same as the fake advertising that's going on. You know, you've seen these ads. The CBS pulled the ads, and now the networks are tossing them out there. Now instead of putting them on the networks, they're doing local cable buys to try and get these ads out there. And it's incredible. I mean, this is called propaganda. And, you know, creating fake news and feeding it to news outlets. And I guess some 36 or 38 television stations across the country actually played this thing. And then it got outed a couple days ago. And everybody's going, well, what's the big deal? And in fact, you know, I forget which Republican spokesman it was. It was probably Scotty. I frankly don't remember. But I do remember what he said. And he said, you know, if you're surprised by this, you need to learn more about information, you know, how information is disseminated in the modern marketplace. In other words, you know, fake news is done all the time. It's called news releases and things. But see, news releases are labeled as news releases. If I get a fax or a letter or an email from some corporation about their wonderful new product and how great it is for the environment or whatever, you know, whether it's a green company or whether it's Monsanto, it comes across on their letterhead and it says it's a news release. This apparently didn't. And apparently, the TV stations, I mean, there you've got some very embarrassed news directors out there, because these TV stations actually thought they were airing some sort of network news clip, something that came down to them from someplace. Now, you know, on the one hand, I guess this kind of shows that you got a lot of folks out there not really paying attention to what's going on. But nonetheless, it also shows that there was some concealment going on. Well, now, there is an ad it's reported in the Wall Street Journal to Washington Wire that there's a Help Wanted ad running in Hollywood. The Department of Homeland Security is looking for an employee. The salary? $89,239,000 to $136,466,000 a year. Between $90,000 and $135,000 a year, roughly, they're offering to pay. And they are looking for someone to provide. This person's title is going to be Entertainment Liaison Officer. They're looking for someone to provide strategic guidance to Department of Homeland Security officials when they are approached by filmmakers requesting production or research assistance. Here we are. This is the Department of Propaganda Department. And where are Americans? Where is the news media going, hey, what's going on with this? And in the midst of this, of course, you know, I just have to come back to this. 1 year, many distortions. We have this war in Iraq. We underestimated the cost. Where's the reporting on this thing? You remember when the United States Agency for International Development, Andrew Natsios, had said that, this was on April 23rd of 2003, he says, the operation in Iraq will cost no more than $1.7 billion. That's what he said to Congress. How much have we spent? Well over 100. Well, almost 150. $1.7 billion. We underestimated the number of troops we'd need. We underestimated the violence. We had no exit plan. We discovered no weapons of mass destruction. And this administration is sending out phony news releases about Medicare. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you, people who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Measurements of global warming are taken in the most unlikely of places, ice. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. How do climatologists determine that the Earth is warmer or colder than it was in the past? Will Steffen, co-author of a new book, Global Change in the Earth System, says ice in Antarctica and Greenland provides historical measurements of temperature. The ice developed in seasonal layers, so a core drilled through the sheets can be analyzed like a timeline.
There are little bits of gases trapped in the ice layers, so you can actually try to put together what the atmosphere was like back then. You can also measure an isotope of oxygen, which is in water in very small amounts. The amount of oxygen 18 actually correlates with the temperature at the time, so we actually have a way that we can get at how cold or how warm it was in the past.
Steffen says ice cores drilled in Greenland prove the Earth's climate can rapidly change.
And so what we see when we look at the Greenland ice core is we see some radical shifts in oxygen 18 content, and that corresponds to temperature changes on the order of 10 degrees Celsius, which are very, very big swings, and they happen in just a couple of decades, easily within a human lifetime.
Steffen says temperatures in the North Atlantic have risen by 6/10 of a degree in just the past few decades. He adds that 420,000 years of Antarctic ice indicates a sharp increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
And we can see in those records that the natural variability of CO2 is between about 180 parts per million and 280 parts per million. And we're now at about 370 parts per million. This contemporary rise is, of course, due to human activities.
Steffen says this means humans have doubled the Earth's normal range of carbon dioxide. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
We'll be right back.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. How could democracy be so easy? Actually, it takes a lot of work, but it is ultimately easy. It turns out, interesting researchers in England found that democracy is in our genes. All animals actually make decisions democratically. It's a fascinating story. I'll tell you about it one of these days. Don in Humboldt County, California, is on the line. 1-866-889-8894 toward the end of the show here. Hey, Don, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment. I was driving along and heard that number two Al-Qaeda guy might, in fact, have gotten away. And, you know, I slapped my dashboard and went, yeah. And I caught myself and realized that that is what I've been reduced to, rooting for the underdog now because of what I think is just the total lack of truth-telling and honesty and integrity of the Bush administration. And I know that, I mean, I'm not proud of that, but that was just a spontaneous reaction.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that we all have to be very careful about, is we have to keep our eye on you know, what it is we really want, and that's we want democracy in the United States and we want peace around the world, and we want it to do it in a rational and honest and forthright fashion that doesn't demean people and doesn't make situations worse. And that frankly, to a large extent, it has been the history. It certainly has been the ideal of the United States. It hasn't always been the history of the United States. We've screwed up big time quite a few times. But we've also done really well a lot, and we need to hold that. Don, that's a good one. I mean, thank you for sharing that with me.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, 1-866-889-8894. We're just about to the end of the program here. I got an email. Hello, Tom. I just started tuning from Tokyo via the web last week. Excellent program. I'm not a U.S. citizen, but wish I could help vote those frauds out of the U.S. Office. They have really shamed the U.S. Remarkable. Thank you, Joseph, for that email from Japan. Thanks to Louise for producing a great program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York City for editing our music. Thanks to our sponsors for participating in the program. Thanks to the radio stations that are carrying us, Sirius Satellite Network, RadioPower.org. And thanks to you for joining us today. Tune in next week. Same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. I'll see you here then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.